itself ideological, in the sense that ideals are merely part of the seamless web of administered reality that forces compliance, also of concepts and artistic representations, ultimately through power. But even in this context, Adorno seeks to discover through critique the hidden interest structure behind irrational ideologies and the anthropological changes in human beings that leads to the instrumental efficiency of irrational ideas. Here lies the importance for Adorno of the critique of fascist ideology and of the culture industry. It seems to us that Adorno, under the historical impact of fascism, Stalinism, and the culture industry, drastically downplayed the first meaning of ideology in relation to the second and third, absorbing it ultimately in the third. Footnote 57, text. He was ready, often enough, to utilize the results of social science. But, as we will see, the relationship of empirical social science to critical philosophy was always antinomic in his work. The ultimate reason Adorno lost hope of discovering behind present social facts dynamic objective possibilities in the manner of Marx and Lukács before him, or even Habermas after him. He responded, therefore, to the antinomy of critical thought and instrumental reason. Emerging from the debris of genuine ideologies with his own antinomic combination of immanent critique, addressing and mediating the critical potentialities of genuine work and transcendent critique, denouncing the one-dimensional world of the culture industry. Adorno was never smugly complacent with the antinomic structure of his own critique. Turning the reflective power of critique against itself, he demonstrated in many of his writings, footnote 58, text, the inadequacy of either immanent or transcendent critique and the necessity of maintaining both an uneasy opposition. To be sure, the weight of each mode of critique in their antinomic combination is for Adorno not an absolute matter. In a period, classical liberalism, when genuine ideologies play a major role in social integration, the demonstration of their interest structure, as in classical Marxist ideology critique, from the transcendent or outside point of view of total society, may be the most crucial task. Page 203. But in an epoch that threatens all realms of consciousness with subsumption and one-dimensional reduction, imminent criticism, immersion in the eternal form and structure of cultural objects play a redeeming protective function. In the earlier epoch, Marxist theory has to confront liberal ideology with its moment of falsehood. In the present, critical theory must insist on the moment of truth of ideologies against technocratic reason and even the sociology of knowledge. Adorno's own sympathies are clearly with immanent critique. Footnote 59, text. Both immanent and transcendent critique, however, suffer from deep internal problems. Immanent critique all too readily celebrates the autonomy of mind, postulating, as Adorno seems to do at times, footnote 60, text, an almost completely independent logic of cultural forms. Measuring culture against its own normative ideal, immanent critique all too readily forgets about the ambiguous role of ideas in social conflicts and distracts from the true horrors of the social world, footnote 61, text. And even if it manages to discover dynamic contradictions between idea and pretense in works or culture as a whole, immanent critique is powerless to resolve the contradictions. To liberate mind from their explosive results or even to discover social truths through the work. Footnote 62. Text. But transcendent critique, which includes most socialist writers and cultural issues, by suppressing all independent logic of cultural forms, is complicitous with present and future administrations seeking to level an intricate culture. Transcendent critique is interested in the uniform whole and spares itself the conceptual effort of examining the particular in its difference. Footnote 63, text. Nevertheless, only transcendent critique reproduces the image of the reified totality that all genuine critique must take into account, and only it has that total intransigence against all reification required by any future radical politics. Footnote 64, text. And yet, the conceptual reproduction of the reified world on its own produces nothing worth saving. Transcendent critique cannot ultimately suppress its affinity to barbarism. To Adorno, dialectical critique of culture or ideology is the extremely uneasy antinomic synthesis of immanent and transcendent critique. We can take seriously his claim that dialectical critique heightens cultural criticism until the notion of culture is itself negated, fulfilled, and surmounted. Footnote 65, text. Only if we drop the last word, dialectical critique can, on the basis of Adorno's self-presentation, hardly be more than the successful work which expresses the idea of harmony negatively by embodying the contradictions. Page 204. Adorno's dialectical, as against Hegel's, is obliged to be mindful of the duality of the moments. The dialectical critique of culture has no alternative but to participate in culture and not participate. Footnote 66, text. The consequences of Adorno's redefinition of cultural criticism were momentous for the development of the very form of his critical theory. The demand to liberate the critical power of the works of culture by stringent combination of both transcendent and immanent critique is satisfied only by the analysis of those works that avoid the fetishization of culture by taking reflection into their very structure. The culture that is possible only as culture critique exists, according to Adorno, only in the post-aesthetic work of the avant-garde. On the other hand, the ideology critique that has criticized its own transcendent and often scientific pretense of locating function of a culture in a completely understood whole is forced to accept the self-critique of culture, especially art, on an equal footing with critical theory itself. Footnote 67, text. The precondition, however, is that modern art incorporate the cracks and the crevices of a world torn merciless apart into its representations. Footnote 68. Text. Here lies the special importance of presenting cultural theory in terms of the critical essay form, which is best suited to micrology. Footnote 69. Text. Its critical function affirms and preserves the cognitive dimension of works of art. The parallel critique of autonomous works, however, destroy the totalization and systematic illusions of critical theory itself. Still present in Lukács's and even the early Horkheimer's and Marcuse's version of the critical Marxist enterprise, If behind the curtain of mediation Hegelian theory discovered itself in Lukács' version of Marxism, discovered the proletariat whose proper class consciousness the theory supposedly was, then it is Adorno's view that any version of transcendent and totalizing ideology critique in the old sense will discover only the totality of the administered world. In Adorno's late pessimistic theory, only the brittle and precarious essay form a primarily immanent critique can discover the self-critique of reality, which is today restricted for Adorno to critical art and philosophy. His last major works, Negative Dialectics, and the posthumously published Aesthetic Theory, are best understood at themselves collection of essays and at times even aphorism in the manner of Minima Moralia.